thatgreatbusinessshow.com is brought to you by DeFacto Shaving Oil, the best anyone can get. Made in Ireland, sold worldwide.
Welcome to That Great Business Show, Ireland's best business podcast. I'm your host, Conal O'Mora. On this episode, episode 39, believe it or not, we have two llamas in studio, and they're going to tell us all the secrets of great merchandising. Now, honestly, we also have a one-time hairdresser turned farmer turned educator who now chairs the SME lobby group ISME to explain its role in having perjurers sent to jail for up to 10 years. And regulars to the podcast will remember Hannah Rickson, founder of Get the Shifts, who joined us on episode 29 to tell us what it was like to sell her baby. That was her business she poured much blood, sweat and tears into. She sold to a company called FRS. Today, we have FRS in with us to give their side of the story and to tell us all about what is a really, really interesting and diverse business. If you love business and if you love how we do business, please do tell your pals in business to listen to That Great Business Show and to follow us on our LinkedIn pages where you can find out more about the show. Plus, we give followers a sneak peek of what's coming up on the show every week. And as always, That Great Business Show is brought to you by DeFacto Shaving Oil, the world's best shaving oil, made in Mayo, sold worldwide.
That Great Business Show.
People who try to scam the insurance system by lying to the courts are finally in for a rude awakening. A brand new law means that those convicted of perjury could see the inside of the slammer for up to 10 years and or a fine of up to €100,000. This change in the law is a great example of how lobbying can be a force for good, as the SME body ISME has been chasing our politicians to get this law across the line for years. We should also give a special Team GBS hat tip to an Shanador Porico Kedi for the work he has done on the bill in the Erachtus Machu Aforic. Joining me now is the brand new chair of ISME, Leitrim-based Margaret O'Rourke Doherty, to talk to us about this, about ISME and about her own remarkable business journey from hairdressing to florist to farmer to educator and now lobbyist. Welcome to That Great Business Show, Margaret.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Are you mad? Did you take on the ISME chair for any good reason or you had nothing better to do?
No, I think there's lots of good reasons to take on a role like this, and it's one that I'm very privileged to take on. I think the power of coming together, power of the collective is really valuable.
On your LinkedIn page, you may not know this because you may not have looked at it. You know the way that you never look at stuff. You did write once, if I put my name to something, then I'm invested in it.
Yeah, that's true. That is very true.
Well, you're in there.
Yeah, I'm in there. Yeah, I'm in there for the long haul.
How long are you going to be as me chair?
2 years. So it's a 2-year term.
So for the next 2 years, you can tell the world that ISME changed the law, or had a hell of a lot to do with the change in the law, to stop the nonsense that was going on with insurance scamming.
Yeah, so the crew in ISME, they started lobbying for this in 2017, so it's a long time coming. There's a special thank you to Porco Kedi and those who supported the bill through the channel and through all the way. But it is well needed, and I suppose exaggerated claims, you know, people being able to bump it up has been a crux to us all in business, and not just in business, but also society as well. So
it is corrosive in society, when people say, they're scamming it again.
You know, it's not just business, it's not just, you know, cars, it's the local communities, it's the community gate, you know, the community areas and spaces as well. So it is really important to us all that this is looked after. So yeah, it's something that ISME as a collective, it's been built on for years and worked on for years, but something we're extremely proud of.
Lobbying isn't necessarily viewed greatly in Ireland, is it?
No, I think everybody wants it, but everybody undervalues it. And I think it's not until there's a problem that people really see the power of it. So I think more people should kind of really think about what it is and what it means and how it impacts their business or their life in general, and kind of come together and join an organisation like ISME, because it's collectively that we can make change If we don't, a single voice on its own isn't as powerful.
There are, what, 250,000 odd SMEs in the country. There aren't 250,000 odd members of ISME. Why not?
Why not? There's various reasons. I think until people meet a problem or a bump on the road, I think, you know, people are often, you know, looking for the solution when it happens rather than being proactive and being involved from early on. I think we're looking to change that. We have a large membership as it is. We have, I think, over 10,500 members, which is quite a lot. But we do want to grow that and grow that very significantly. I suppose I'm in Leitrim. I'm very proud to say that. But, you know, I'd like to grow the ISME membership around my area and across all of Ireland. And while we do have members across society in Ireland, we definitely want to grow and bring more members in from all areas and all parts of the business community.
You have many, many business experiences. Talk to me about them. You were in hairdressing, floristry. You studied organic farming. You were... Did I say a florist? I've forgotten half of the things that you've done.
Yeah, I definitely have around it. I grew up in a pub. I lived over the pub.
Remember that as well? Yeah.
So I, business is kind of, I've seen it.
And when you say a pub, was it one of those pubs with the cornflakes in the window as well? Or
well,
or
was it
after that era?
I grew up in Castlereagh in Roscommon. So it was, at that time, I think when we moved there was something like 27 pubs in the area, which in a small town. So it was a pub, it was a restaurant, it was a shop, it was an everything. And then we lived above it. It was also a convent as well at one point in time.
As you do. Must be a first. A convent in a pub. And were you set to work early?
Yeah, so I would have always been in and out and cleaning glasses and doing what I was told and generally and thinking you can do. That's what family businesses are about. So yeah, I was kind of always there. And then I left school and I went straight into work and I went into hairdressing. I went into Petermark and I loved it, but I was unfortunately one of those kids that had extreme dermatitis and it was never going to be an option for me because it just...
What happens? Is it the hair or something?
Yeah, I was in an awful shape. I think probably I should have figured it out because I'm allergic to horse hair.
But that can be an allergy.
Yeah.
But anyways.
It didn't.
Hair and you were not...
Hair and me were not compatible in any shape, make or form.
Even though you've got long hair.
Yeah. But to work with it and all the chemicals, it just wasn't going to work for me. So when you add the mix together. So I had to quickly... I suppose figure out what I was going to do. So I moved into reception. I was quite good at that. And then I was there for a good few years and worked throughout all of their different chains and loved it. And then...
People, you won't be the first person on this podcast who say great things about Petermark. They seem to have a magnificent ethic or ethos.
Yeah. Well, I loved it. I loved everything about it. And I actually, this industry is one, it's a really vibrant and it's actually noted as one of the happiest industries to work in. I think it's Kantar has stats on that from years ago when they'd done a poll that hairdressers are one of the happiest people going.
I also know in COVID how much people love their hair and getting their hairs done.
Yeah.
And nothing else. It wasn't about a new dress. It wasn't about a new pair of shoes.
No.
Just my hair.
Yeah, but that's for more reasons than vanity. I suppose it's dignity. It's how it makes you feel. It's the emotional connection to it. So I loved it. So yeah, so it was definitely for me. So when I had to leave and it broke my heart. So I tried many other things after that.
So let's go through them.
Yeah.
Next stop,
I had a baby. So I have...
Congratulations.
Yeah, so well, she's almost 18 now. So so I took a bit of time out of the workforce for that. And then I went back in, I worked in MBNA and realised that kind of big sales environment.
Was that up in Carrick and Shannon?
Yeah, Carrick and Shannon, yeah. So so I was there for a while and then I...
So you're skipping over that. That wasn't your thing, obviously.
No, it wasn't. It was lovely. Yeah, it was lovely. It was a lovely environment, beautiful buildings, you know, fancy dress and, you know, real kind of... I loved it, but it just wasn't for me.
Okay.
So I...
Moving along.
So then I think I've become the mother of reinvention. So I went in and I retrained as a florist.
Because
I could see a real opening for that.
And you told me that the reason that you went for floristry is that your mother loves flowers.
Yeah, my mother, she loves growing anything that will grow. So, yeah.
There's no connection, you know.
Yeah. No, well, it just, anything to do with the earth or the soil she loved. So, I trained as a florist because, well, I suppose when I stood back and I looked at what was missing around my area, I could see that there was an opening for florists, whether that be weddings, whether that be funerals, I could see that there was definitely...
And this is, again, in Leitrim.
This is again in Leitrim,
There's one small problem with Leitrim, and that's the population.
Yeah.
25,000 people is not enough to keep a lot of the stuff going.
It definitely was a viable, very viable business for me at that time. And my reasons for leaving it were nothing to do with the business. So I actually set up a big enough florist in Mohill, which is a small, but it's where Lochrane Castle is.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. So I had Lochrane Castle and I had a good connection with Lochrane Castle and a very good relationship with the team that worked there. So I would have had a lot of brides.
Births, marriages, events,
so I would have had a huge amount of brides coming in and out to me. And so I really love that. But skip on a few years again, and I was pregnant with my second baby, and I had an awful struggle with getting people staff. I could, trained florists. There's
must
not
be
a
few and far between.
At the time, there isn't. But we've solved that problem.
Oh yeah, that's okay. Now I see. All right. Well, let's not jump to that one yet.
So at the time, I couldn't get staff, and I was under pressure, and I suppose, as a mum who's just had a new baby, you have to make choices at that. Mm-hmm. Well, at that time, I felt I had to make a choice. I was doing a wedding one of my biggest weddings, and it was seven bridesmaids and all of the bouquets and the buttonholes in the church. And my infant was attached to me in a little ling at 5 days old. And the day before I had her, I was at the wholesalers here in Dublin. Yeah. So
okay,
something had to change.
And you might have been a little tired.
So
you got through it?
Got through it, yeah, but I did. I did make a decision that I had to, I just had to take a little bit of time out. So
okay.
I closed the doors, and that was grand. And then I took a little bit of time at home with the kids, and roll on a few years, worked for a few places, and then while I was doing all that, I was doing a master's in organic farming, which I loved. I had a real interest in horticulture anyway, and I still do. I absolutely love it. Actually,
there is a big thing in Leitrim actually about organic, isn't there?
Yeah.
Isn't the organic centre?
The organic centre is there. Ross Inver, Knockvicker, in even Leitrim Roscommon, there would definitely be a large number. But across the country, it's really, really grown, I suppose. No
good,
pun intended.
Very good. Oh, we love puns.
Yeah, so it is horticulture to me is a fantastic career choice. And, if you love it, you love it. But again, here's something from a female perspective. I don't have land, so I had to weigh up all my options. I had a young family, and I didn't feel at that point in time, not having land and not having that connection, that I could make a viable business.
That's very interesting. Being a city boy never would have crossed my mind, but that's a really interesting insight. Yeah.
Mm. Okay. Yeah.
So away from that you go to...
So while I was doing all my studying for my master's, I went into National Organic Training Skillnet, which is funded through Skillnet Ireland and the Department of Education Skills, and I suppose they would provide education to the organic sector.
Explain to people how Skillnet, what it is and what it does.
So Skillnet is it's a network. It's a training network. So it's there to support businesses with enterprise-led training and workforce development. I suppose it's led by the businesses. So if businesses have a specific need, they can come together and they can come to the network and design programs that they need.
Funded by the state?
Funded by, Skillnet Ireland and the Department of Education and Skills. Now, it is match funded, but it is definitely a very, very valuable asset to businesses. And I've seen this from multiple areas.
And what you have done now has gone full circle because you set up a Skillnet for?
Yeah, so I set up a Skillnet for the hair and beauty industry.
Called Hasbic?
No, Image Skillnet.
Okay.
And then we also have Habic as well, Hair and Beauty Industry Confederation.
Okay.
So I suppose I could see, and everywhere I went, I was being told about all of the problems and, all of the problems within the industry and all of this. And everybody had problems, but nobody could give me any solutions. So we sent about kind of trying to put some solutions to those problems. One of the problems was around education. So the SkillNet, so Image SkillNet is there. It's there. It supports. We support a large number of businesses every year with their workforce development and upskilling. And more than that, like I suppose even through the pandemic, it was great because actually businesses were coming to us and, you know, sometimes it was like a counselling session. They didn't know where to go. They knew they had the skills. They knew they were able to do this. But sometimes they just needed a little bit of a confidence boost.
So often that happens in business.
Yeah.
People want to talk to people and particularly people who know what they're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes people were second guessing themselves and they just needed somebody to say, you've got this. You've been doing this for 40 years or 30 years or 20 years. Now you just need to put it on paper and write the policy for it, you know.
And that became or is a business.
Yeah. 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 So,
and that is why that is what keeps you, what keeps meat on your table, if you use that term.
Yeah. So like, I suppose we obviously we have this SkillNet there. It's quite a large network. We deal with up at this point, thousands of salons every year.
Would you?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Like,
yeah.
1,000, 3,000, 5,000,
10? I'd say probably hitting the 2,000 mark, closer to the 2,000 mark, plus their staff.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then through Handbook as well, we would also have a large membership on that as well. Now, we did open membership up free.
Yeah.
Because actually last year we could just see that, you know.
Of course, devastation.
It was just devastation for them. And more than anything, they you know, hair had some element of representation, but beauty didn't. And they just needed support and they just needed it. They didn't know how they needed it, but they just needed it. So we just opened our membership up. So we would have thousands of salons across the country involved in that. So it's great. And it supports a team in Leitrim for us, but also more importantly, it supports those thousands of businesses across the country. Like we've, even through Image SkillNet, we've like everybody assumed that there was an apprenticeship in hairdressing. And there wasn't. So now.
Is there not?
No, there is now, but there wasn't. There wasn't.
When was that introduced?
2019. We got the program validated.
But if I wanted to go and become a hairdresser, surely you start literally at the bottom. You sweep the floor and then work your way up, no?
Yeah, you would try. You would do a traineeship.
Yeah.
But it's something that was not mapped to a national framework of qualifications.
Okay.
Yeah, it was missing from the industry. Now, obviously, there was fantastic training there. And, you know, we wouldn't have this viable and booming industry if you know, the skills and talent agenda wasn't something to the forefront that has been there for years. But it was just in terms of that recognition and being on a framework that wasn't there. So we now have that, which is brilliant. I think it's there for generations to come.
So apply all of the above to your new role as chair of ISME.
Yeah. So there's lots I can bring to the role in ISME, but it's not just me. Like, we're a council of 27, national council, which is a real...
Would you put your hand up and said, I want to be it?
Yeah. Yeah, I have. And I definitely, there's lots of skill sets I have that I can bring to the role. And, you know, I'm not shy about kind of being able to take on challenges and say, we'll try and figure this out. But as I said, it is a national council of 27, which I think is a really valuable thing because there's 27 businesses from across all sectors. And we have various other vertical organisations in there as well. So it's a huge council, but also as well, it's a female majority council, which is the
really?
First time. Yeah.
That's very good.
Yeah, we have 15 women and 12 fantastic gents. And so
that's really positive. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
As you know, we're the only gender balanced business show in the world, I think. So I'm very pleased with that, very proud of that. So what are you going to do with ISME with all the women?
With all the women. Well, look, I think, you know, I met with most of the council recently and, you know, definitely things I suppose it's building on what has already been built, what has already been there. Like what the councils prior to us have done is fantastic, and it's taken that and building on that. So there's lots of things like, you know, our pre-budget submission has gone in. You know, we're looking at things like the implementation of the findings from the SME task force. You know, things like, you know, we want to be included in the LEAF, which is the Labour Economic Employer Forum as well. So all of these things we see as vital to bring in balance. To like when you look at the number of businesses that are SMEs in Ireland, you're talking, what, 99.8% of businesses that are SMEs employing 68% of the workforce. You know, 50 of those employ less than 50% employ less than, you know, 50 people. you know, we need our voices really heard and clear. And you can see from, you know, the implementation of the Perjury Bill that coming together and having your voice heard and collectively lobbying does work.
There's another little one that I just noticed, and I'd say it's because of COVID it hasn't been given due coverage yet. But did I see, it looks like the government is talking or suggesting or implying that social partnership is going to make a reappearance. Did you see that?
I did.
Discuss. Anybody who doesn't remember what happened with social partnership should take a little history lesson on this. It doesn't end well.
No. I think you can't discuss anything until all the players are around the table and all voices are heard, listened to and recognised, you know. But, you know, I always come back to it from my perspective. I often find the way businesses are often seen, and particularly small businesses, I've heard the term vested interests thrown around so many times. I've heard different terminology used around businesses. And I think unless you have a really strong functioning business sector, you don't have any of the other elements. You don't
Nothing
have a functioning health system.
Happens.
You don't have functioning, you know.
Taxes. There taxes. Are no taxes.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think we just need to step back and start to look at things from a different way. So
will it happen?
I don't think so. It didn't happen before.
Don't give up already. Yes, we will. It will. I've worked around the business area for many, many decades now, and I'm never going to give up. But I have actually seen, you're considerably younger than I am, I have definitely seen a big, big, big shift in people's view of businesses. Like, it's no longer, you know, men in suits and with cigars.
No.
People just see fellas or women with their sleeves rolled up doing a day's work.
Yeah. Like there's like the business landscape is definitely changing. And like, as it, like, I suppose our council is representation of what the business community more looks like. But it's to start to get it more. It's to start to get our voices heard, because what is good for big business is not necessarily good for small businesses.
Yeah.
And unless those.
Very different.
Yeah. Things. Very, very different. Like I've seen that all my life, you know, and I think small businesses are sick of having decisions made for them. And look, there's always an element of that. But it's just, unless your voice is really heard in that mix, then there is a problem. And look, we want, you know, and there's also the other side of that, like, you know, it's not just about the business, it's about the employees, you know, the value of the culture and all that sort of stuff. But unless you have the foundations of business and the support of businesses, and of those 99.8% are micro and SMEs. So why is the focus not on that? And like the
GSA, well, you know why.
I do know. I do know why. But like, you know, even, you know, we had the G7 last week, and, you know, the talk around corporation tax and you know, a move to 15% from our 12.5%, and, you know, but there's this massive focus on foreign direct investment and but not enough focus on our indigenous industry and growing that.
It's always surprised me. Taoiseach has not taken it and run with it and championed it.
Like, yeah.
It's sitting there to be done. But anyway, there's a lot of things in this country
it is.
That need to be done. I'm going to have to wrap up because I need to know about this thing we do. Who would you hire in a heartbeat?
I actually found this really challenging.
Did you?
Yeah.
Because you have so many to choose from.
Yeah, I had so many to choose from, but I suppose I would, from my own personal perspective, I suppose money isn't my motivator. So I was kind of saying, who would I hire in a heartbeat? And for me, I think it would be the Vice President of the United States.
Kamala.
Yeah. Yeah.
You wouldn't be the first person.
Yeah.
Then.
Yeah. Yeah, I just think, you know, she's.
You think, would she join?
I know it's pie in the sky stuff, but I think she is the first. She has changed things for many women,
yeah.
And she is somebody to be really championed. And there's a lot of positives. If I was to come more closer to home,
yeah.
I think Sarah McInerney is another fantastic lady, and, you know, not afraid to ask those questions and probe deeply.
But hang on a second now. Does she know anything about business?
I know she's not afraid to ask those questions and probably put her shoulder to the wheel and get in and be hard.
She'd be a very good board member.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
All right. Well,
yeah.
Tell Sarah that you're looking for her. That's only because you just want an easy ride
No. I've been on with Sarah and she didn't give me an easy ride. And actually, do you know something? I respect her for that. So,
good. Very good.
Yeah.
You will join us again, I hope, on That Great Business Show, because there are many, many, many other things that ISME will be doing, I'm sure, under your tutelage. So congratulations, Comhairdeas, on being appointed the chair for 2 years. That is Margaret O'Rourke Doherty, Chair of ISME. Thank you so much for
joining us.
On That Great Business Show.
You're listening to That Great Business Show.
ThatGreatBusinessShow.com.
Every week we ask listeners to consider making just one small change. Switching from shaving foam to the world's best shaving oil, Mayo Made DeFactoShave.com, means you will no longer add to the 20 million cans of shaving foam sent to landfills in Ireland every year. A 13-euro bottle of DeFacto should last you more than half a year, so it's good for your planet, your pocket, and your skin. Buy it now, DeFactoShave.com.
Conobio, That Great Business Show.
FRS stands for Farm Relief Services. It's a multi-million euro social enterprise co-op. It's active in every county in Ireland and incorporates a range of businesses that employs a staggering 2,000 people. It has an annual turnover of 100 million euros, so it's big, it's successful, and yet many or most of you may never have heard of it. FRS includes farm relief services, fencing, recruitment, training, herdwatch, Torresnua, business services, employability, and most recently, get the shifts that we heard about when founder Hannah Rickson joined us on episode 29 of That Great Business Show. My next guest, Peter Byrne from Roscrea, joined FRS 40 years ago, and he's just announced his imminent retirement as CEO, having given most of his working life to the business. Peter, welcome to That Great Business Show.
Thanks very much, Colin. Delighted to be here.
Well, I'm delighted you are here because I have known of FRS, or at least I used to know it as Farm Relief Services, for probably as long as you are working there. You have built some business.
Yeah, it has been very successful, I suppose. When I finished college back in 1975, I started working with Mockran & Firma. And about 2 years into that, the then Secretary General of Mockran & Firma, Pat O'Murphy, asked me to look at the whole area of relief milking services, which were just getting off the ground here.
Why was that needed or wanted?
Because we had an awful lot of one-man units, an awful lot of farmers developing, expanding in dairy, and we had just joined the EU, the EEC as it was called at the time, and there was big expansion in dairy, and there just wasn't enough labour on a lot of farms, and farmers need backup.
And you see, fellas like me who were born and reared in the city don't really understand that the cows need milking every day.
Twice a day.
Yes. And there's no going on holidays. So when a farmer wants to go on holidays, he just or she just cannot, unless there's somebody who can step in.
Yeah, the holidays is one part of an important part of it, Colin, but there's lots of other reasons why farmers needed a relief service back in those days as well. For example, if there was any sort of a family event, you know, a wedding, funerals, whatever, they needed to be away from the farm, and they didn't always have to. If they had a young family and wanted to be involved in sports of any type and, you know, get involved with their family in that. And then there was the other sad side of it, when farmers were either sick or had a death in the family or whatever, and they needed backup. So those were all the reasons. And at the same time that it was developing here in Ireland, it had been sort of developed a little bit further in Holland. And over the coming number of years, we actually looked a good bit to the Dutch farm relief services and sort of based our services around what they had succeeded in doing.
You are down here as a social enterprise co-op. What does that mean?
Well, co-op, part of it is started off. So we're farmer-owned cooperative. We're set up by farmers for farmers. Our shareholders are all farmers.
How many shareholders do you have?
Well, we would have about 5,000 in the international co-op. And of those farmers, none of them get any dividend or anything. All the money is reinvested in the business.
I was going to ask you that. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So they put it in the shares. And to be honest with you, Conal, some of them wouldn't even remember at this stage that they put in shareholding into it 40 years ago because it wasn't a big thing. It wasn't like putting money
How small was it?
A pound. A £1 shareholding just to get it off the ground.
And you got 5,000 £1. Was that it?
Yes.
Wow.
Over time.
Wow.
And that's where it started from.
And you have built 2,000 people plus 100 million euro turnover.
Yeah.
That's some growth.
It has been fantastic. And I would have to acknowledge that we got support in the early years from the dairy co-ops. We approached all the dairy co-ops and asked them to help us with a development fund over a five-year period. And we asked them for a funding in proportion to their size at the time. There was the big six at that time, Avonmore, Waterford, Kerry, Golden Bay and Mitchelstown and Ballyclaw. and all of them, including right down to the smallest ones in the country, all contributed. And that helped give us a bit of a foundation to get started. Then subsequently, the government set up, you might remember, the Youth Employment Agency. And a guy by the name of Niall Green took over as CEO of the Youth Employment Agency. And he was a fantastic guy. And we made an application to Niall. He came down and met us in our little rented office in Roscrea. And he had confidence in us, and he gave us money, which helped us move actually from being having part-time managers to full-time managers. That was really what helped us get...
Now, I know what you're going to say. You say, oh, no, it's the team. But the team, or the top of the team, has been you for a long while. What's the secret? What have you done right over those 40 years?
Well, I suppose the ethos of the organisation is always a sort of a cooperative, honesty, and dealing fairly with people. And those are the things. I don't think there's any other magical formula that I've done.
You must have had rows with people.
You have occasionally rows with people, but you don't, you know, you move on. You're never going to get 100% consensus on everything. So you discuss, you tease things out. And didn't have much rows in the beginning because I was there on my own, so I didn't anybody to fight with. But over the years...
I've met fellas who can fight with themselves, I can tell you.
Over the years, we grew. And, you know, I suppose that working in farming and the co-op side of farming, there was a great commitment. It was a huge commitment from farmers. That should never be underestimated when you think back of what has happened with Farmer Leave Services. That all those early days was local farmers coming in at the end of their day into a room somewhere in the back of their local pub or their farm advisory office or someplace, and sitting down and discussing how to get a relief milking service going in the area. Because originally they were all independent cooperatives. There was 33 cooperatives there at one stage, and through a series of amalgamations down through the years, there is now just 6 cooperatives, and most of that area is now sort of under one national umbrella called the National Co-op Farmer Leave Service.
What is, there are so many businesses that you actually get involved in. What are the ones that are thriving, and what are the ones that will probably have to just disappear over a period of time because, you know, their day is done?
I think you won't believe this answer, but I don't think any of them have their day done. They all have potential for the future. Obviously, one of the first areas that we diversified into was FRS recruitment. And that's a regular recruitment agency, just the same as any other. Unique in that it is the only farmer-owned cooperative recruitment agency in the country. And therefore, there's nobody taking any money out of that. That's all reinvested in the business continuously. And that's grown, and that has a turnover at this stage of over 18 million. And
what made you decide to buy Hannah Rickson to get the shifts?
Because we're always looking at new ideas and new options. And I think the model that Hannah had developed fit in very well with what we were trying to do. We've a lot of temporary workers already working in FRS recruitment. Hannah had developed a model for engaging temporary workers through her app, which we think was a great idea. Unfortunately, for the last year and a half, due to COVID, her business had to be sort of put on the shelf, more or less. But we see Hannah's business Get the Shifts as a wonderful addition to what we have. And we have great belief in Hannah herself as a businesswoman, and she'll develop more businesses along that line.
What about the future for farming in general? Now, I know it's a massive question, but we've just seen Britain, the UK and the Australians sign off a deal, which does have beef implications. What's your absolute gut about the future of farming in this country?
Well, a lot of our farming industry in Ireland is based around dairying, and our dairying industry at the moment is going very well. There's always going to be a need for food products. There's always going to be a market for milk. And I think we're very well established being able to produce our milk from grass, grass-fed animals the whole year round, either outdoors for 7 or 8 months of the year and indoors for the other months on silage. So I think that gives us a very big advantage. Look, there's a big issue there at the moment. We just last night had the climate control bill passed by the Dáil here, and that is going to have some repercussions for farming over the coming years. But the one thing that the farming lobby has to indicate to the government is that farming is actually a positive contributor to climate control, and is actually, by sequestering carbon into the soil, we're actually taking carbon out of the atmosphere rather than adding it to it. And that's just not understood enough. And maybe we as an organisation, as a farming business, haven't got that message across enough to the government. But that's a strong... There is a possibility for in the future that farmers may be able to actually trade carbon.
You told me earlier that you have a reasonably large number of children. Are any of them allowed to drink oat milk, or do you even use the word oat and milk, or any of those words together?
Well, I think at this stage, be allowed to do it just doesn't really matter because they're all well outside the area of my control. They're all gone past their mid-20s at this stage. But look, I mean, we very much, they're all reared in the country, reared very much on, and you know, on the farming background.
But you see, what I'm asking you is, you said the future for dairy is
I understand where you're going with it.
And not alone that, but also that the new types of meat that are going to be made in the factory, or whatever, doesn't matter whether we like the idea of them or not, but they are, they're there now.
Yeah, but so. I think, Conal, on that, nobody has a crystal ball to be able to see 20 or 30 years down the road what's going to happen. But my view is that, you know, we've had a lot of, maybe it's dangerous to use this expression, a lot of fads have come and gone over the time. But I think, you know, very much, you know, look at all the developing countries that are out there. Maybe a lot of those new developments are going to be more expensive and they're maybe at a different end of the market than where there is a huge potential for food for the future. So, look, I think we will always, and being, as I said already, such a green economy as we are in Ireland, I think we have a very good future in farming. And there's a lot of young people, and I'm delighted to say this, there's a lot of young people entering farming in recent times. And while we don't have as big a number of farmers, we have a smaller number of bigger farmers, you know, farming bigger areas of land.
Does that not go against the ethos of everything that back in the day that we wanted to have everybody having a little farm? But now we are heading towards the ranch, aren't we?
We do. If you look across every sector, I mean, many one-man shops have you anymore. You know, inside in the local town, there was always the guy who had a pub and he ran it on his own. The post office is run by a man and his wife, possibly. All of that is gone. That's just a change that has happened in society. And we need scale now for farming.
And if you have scale, I'm going to use the pejorative term, a ranch, because I know that gets up the nose of people. That means that they have proper staffing. Numbers are there. What does that mean by implication for areas of business that you're in, like the farm relief services, if there's already... take a number, 10 or 15 fellas working on a farm.
We have very few, we have no ranches in Ireland. And we have very few farmers.
That's why I said it.
We have very few farmers that have 10 or 15 staff. But there are farms that have 3 and 4 staff. And they still need, we supply those 3 or 4 staff in a lot of cases. They take them on directly through us rather than employing them as their own employees for various reasons. There are some advantages to doing that. For example, they have none of the paperwork and none of the legal employer legislation type of thing that we look after all that for them. But there are other people then who have their own staff, their own employees, but those employees need time off as well and they need relief. They need just busy times of the year. One of the big problems we have in Ireland is that farming is quite seasonal. The huge amount, and this is something that has gone that way more in the last, you know, 9 or 10 years, that is a lot more cows, all cows now. We have this thing called compact calving, where the idea is to have all your cows calving within, you know, 6-8 weeks. And therefore, that's a really peak time. And the cows are off grass at that stage. They're all in sheds. There's a lot more work to be done. And then when it comes to May, when the cows go back out in grass again, there's need for less labour. So there's always going to be need for that additional seasonal labour. So that's where our business is centred around. But we've also brought in some professional services into farming, which weren't there in the past, like hoof care and pregnancy scanning. And, you know, we our latest addition there is Herdwatch, which has developed in the last couple of years, which is how the farmer manages his business now. So instead of having to write notes everywhere, he pulls out his mobile phone and just enters up data. For example, if a farmer is dosing animals now, he doesn't have to sort of, he has to record all the information for his records, but he can just take a photograph of the bottle of medicine. It's sent straight into his records on Herdwatch, and that's the job done. So there's huge changes. I mean, I was talking to a guy the other day who just bought a new tractor, £160,000 or euros for a new tractor. And I mean, that's sort of the level that, you know, the bigger tillage farmers who are farming 300 or 400 acres, they need that sort of equipment. But look, that's the way things are going. We still have about 18,000 dairy farmers in the country, which is quite a sizable number. And those 18,000 farmers are milking more cows than was ever milked in the country before, you know.
By any chance, this is a long shot, have you seen Jeremy Clarkson's new programme on TV? Well, you have you?
I haven't seen the programme, but I read a little bit about it, but I've heard a bit about it.
£1 million is what he, pounds sterling is what he spent on a Lamborghini tractor that doesn't work.
Yeah, I heard a story about a guy like that years ago who decided on a couple of wet days that he put a hood on his own tractor inside in the shed, but he got to realize that when he had the hood on, he couldn't get it out of the shed. So I think Jeremy ran into a bit of a problem like that with his tractor as well. So look, I mean, you are talking about a rancher there. Obviously, I believe he bought 1,000 acres as sort of just...
As you do.
Exactly, just for something to do some evening. And that sort of thing doesn't happen in Ireland. We have people who are dependent on their farming for their living. That's really... We have very few people who have what they call armchair farmers who are you sort of own a lot of land and have somebody else managing it for them, which was Jeremy's story.
Where do your big ideas... Now, I know I can tell that you're a very modest man and you're going to say, oh, no, it's not my idea. But you've obviously been sitting there thinking about how to grow and grow and grow because you've made this thing grow. Where do the big ideas come from?
Well, I'll just give you an example. That's an interesting question, Diane, because I'll give you an example. One day, back in about 2010 or 11, I was talking to our IT manager about... I had this thing in my head. I'm not a big IT guy, as you probably from my age realize, but I said, look, IT is always costing us money. Is there any way you can actually come up with an idea that'll make money? And what I thought about was a very basic sort of thing that he might set up sort of training or helping people who had computers and weren't very good at using them or something like that, and he'd generate a bit of a training business. But he went away and he came back with what is now Herdwatch as a farm management tool, because one of the first things he discovered that 90% of farmers in Ireland weren't using any sort of management system like Herdwatch. There was one or two other alternatives around.
That's just how an idea came. Internet forums, yeah?
If you wanted, I could say, well, that was my idea because I told him, but it wasn't really. It was he actually came up with quite a different idea. Like, how did the recruitment come? It came because we were already supplying a lot of labour into farming and we had people outside of farming then asking them to supply labour to them. And because of a very important relationship that we had with Revenue, whereby our guys were treated as self-employed, we wanted to keep that business completely separate from the non-farming sector. So we set up a recruitment company to supply labour outside of farming, and that's where FRS Recruitment has come from now. We always had to do a certain amount of training of our own staff, so we saw an opening in the market to train other people as well, so we set up FRS Training. And a number of years back then, we tendered for... a contract that the Department of Social Protection put out called JobPath. And the purpose of JobPath is to get unemployed people back into work. And we successfully tendered for that in combination with an English company who had been doing similar type of projects in the UK. And it worked very well as a joint venture until they went out of business in the UK. We actually bought them out. And we now have that contract completely. So it's a completely new, if you talk about... We started off milking cows and we now have a contract with the Department of Social Protection to get people back into jobs.
My antennae have gone up now because of the UK. Are there opportunities or are you, sorry, first of all, are you 26 counties or 32?
Well, we're essentially 26, but Donegal Farm Relief Services cover across into Northern Ireland and they have provided services there. So we don't have an actual base in Northern Ireland, but as I said, Donegal provide quite a lot of services such as hoof care and scanning and relief workers into across the six counties.
There's six counties next, so for you? Will you grow into Northern Ireland?
Oh, yeah. Herdwatch is on sale in both Northern Ireland and the UK. We have over 15,000 farmers using Herdwatch at the moment, and they are both, the vast majority of them are in Ireland. Many of them are also in Northern Ireland and the UK. And that's... We look at expanding that particular product globally because it has potential globally. Yeah.
Fantastic. And then anything else that you could do in the UK being the next near natural market?
Well, obviously something like recruitment would transfer anywhere because it's a standard recruitment agency. We haven't looked at any part of the UK. We do want to grow our own business, just like you mentioned there about taking on get the shifts with Hannah. And we would be looking at other opportunities like that. So if an opportunity to come up in the UK, but bear in mind now, Conal, that I mentioned that I am finishing up in 6 months' time. So it'll be somebody else.
Else's job. I have to ask you, because I loved it, what do you think of the name of the business? You get the shift. So are you going to keep that?
Yeah, it's a very good question. I suppose the first time we mentioned it to our own board, we had to sort of... they're coming from the same sort of generation as myself when Get the Shifts meant something completely different. So, but look, at this stage, we haven't really decided.
That sounds like you're going to change it. Change it.
It'll probably have to be called FRS Get the Shifts anyway.
That's okay. Yeah.
Or Get the FRS Shifts. I don't know which one.
Maybe that works as well. What are you going to do next?
Well, look, I've another 6 or 8 months to work with the new group CEO when he or she is appointed, and I look forward to that. I think it's extremely, if you give your life to something like I have, I think you really want to see that transition happen and happen as smoothly and successfully as possible. And I have every confidence that will happen. And when that happens next February, when I'll be 70 at that stage, and I will be looking forward to sort of riding off into the sunset and spending more time.
You're not going to put the feet up. You have too much energy. You're one of those people. What are you going to do?
Well, I have, as we mentioned earlier, we have 7 children and we have 10 grandchildren at the moment. Yeah, they are, but they still need looking after, you know. Even the babysitting is important. No, I would like, I am actually going looking in the near future as sort of retirement planning. Maybe I've left it a bit late looking at it, but I do, I have the energy, like you say, and I'm not closing my mind to anything. I'll see what might come.
Go on, Sheldon, you're open to non-executive directorships. You'd be brilliant.
Well, that's not for me to say, but...
I'm saying it.
The one thing I do want to do, Conal, that I have my mind made up, is I don't want to go back into a full-time role of any type. But if there was something else there that would that I would be interested in and I would think that I would have something to offer, then that's something I would certainly look at. But I would only take on something that really means something to me. I think I spent my whole life working with people. Our business is all about people. If you think of everything that we do, you know, we supply relief workers, we're a recruitment agency, we're a training company, software as a service is providing, Herdwatch is providing services to farmers. The tourist new thing is all about getting people back into jobs. It's been hugely successful. We did a major contract a couple of years ago with Chagas on delivering an environmental scheme, all of which I think are good for the country, good for the environment, good for the community that we live in. And that, if something comes up that interests me, I would.
You love your GAA. You'd be a brilliant bonnet store, wouldn't you?
No, I went through that already in our local club, and because I had a few sons.
I was thinking a bigger stage.
Because I had a few sons playing, it wasn't the best idea. You know, it's never good to be the bonnet store when you have some of your own family still playing. But look, I love the GAA, both at club level, and what's even great now, I go up on a Saturday morning with my grandchildren and see them. You know, the number of young parents that are up there coaching kids, it's fantastic. It's really fantastic, yeah.
Who would you hire in a heartbeat?
There's somebody that I have huge respect for over the last 15 months because of the whole COVID thing, and it's Dr. Tony Hoolan. I think he is a fantastic communicator. I think he's had to deliver really tough messages. We all like to get on and deliver good messages and be able to tell people good news. But when you have to come on and deliver the sort of messages he has to deliver, I think it's been a very tough thing. He's obviously gone through a very tough period in his own personal life during the same period of time. And I think he's done a fantastic job. And if you could get somebody with his honesty, his communication skills, and obviously his expertise in the field that he's working in as our chief medical officer, that's someone that certainly comes to mind because, like, I probably had heard the name Dr. Tony Hoolan before COVID, but not very much. But, I mean, just a funny little story about that. Actually, we were sitting down to dinner one evening at 6 o'clock, news was on television, and my four-year-old grandchild was there, and he says, "What's the numbers like today?" That's the sort of impact you know, that was happening at the time. Yeah. Every evening we were coming out and we were sitting in front of the television and listening to what was happening. And I think he led us very successfully through a difficult period.
Let us hope that we have seen the back end of it. And
let's hope so,
your little 4-year-old or 5-year-old now possibly won't have to ask those questions again. Peter Byrne, thank you so much for joining us on That Great Business Show.
Thank you very much, Conal. I really enjoyed the chatting. Best of luck to you as well. Thank you.
Subscribe today to That Great Business Show on your favorite podcast platform, including Apple and Spotify.
Do you know what happens to all of those empty shaving foam cans? Well, in Ireland, 20 million of them are sent to landfill every year because they're officially deemed to be hazardous waste. This landfill pollution is completely unnecessary. One bottle of De Facto shaving oil is the equivalent of 10 cans of shaving foam. Switching from foam to the world's best shaving oil is the simplest thing you could do to help keep our planet clean. DeFactoShave.com, saving the planet one shave at a time.
Backing great women-led businesses on every show.
That Great Business Show.
Now, as promised at the start of the show, we have not one, but two llamas in studio next. They're here to tell us in llama language why bad merchandising destroys online sales. They want your business to stop losing customers due to sloppy content. And it is a successful business, having already raised 1.5 million in funding and just now closing another 2.5 million euro. Not bad cash. My talking llamas are Karina Kelly and Jolene Looney, co-founders of Content Llama, a software company based in Donegal Town. Their business helps display product images and matching descriptions in a way that people respond to best and drives online sales for global clients that include Walmart, Intersport, and The Loop, that's part of the DAA. So welcome to That Great Business Show, Karina Kelly and Jolene Looney.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Thanks.
You both sound very quiet. You weren't quiet 5 seconds ago, were you?
Now we're recording.
2.5 million on top of the other 1.5 million. Who's giving you all this cash? That's Karina speaking now.
Yeah, I guess great supporters, but in general, people that can see a great team and a great opportunity.
Are these big VCs or is this local investors?
This round, which is the 2.5 million round, is made up of Elkstone Ventures in Dublin and Angel Investors and the Western Development Commission.
We know the WC very well.
Yeah, so I'm delighted being from Roscommon. They're only down the road that they're actually going to be part of this. So I would have known about them for years, even in my 20s. So for me, it's a big tick box that they're actually supporting and backing a venture that I'm involved in.
You must have a big purse as well. You've tucked away 4 million euro in total. What are you going to do with it all?
No, not exactly four. So it's 2.5 this raise. And before that, it's about $500,000 from Angel.
Oh, I beg your pardon. I did say 1.5 previously. Yeah. So in total, you have three.
About three, yeah.
Okay, well, it's still a lot of money.
Yeah.
What are you going to do with it?
So this is the part of the journey where we actually get to be quite strategic about what we do. We've spent the last couple of years looking at this problem space and what the opportunity is and really honing what a good plan would be. And now what the 2.5 allows us to do is to build out the team that can take us there. So that will be a product team, a commercial team, and a back office team that will actually help us bring this global.
And the two of you met online.
So romantic.
You had nothing to do with merchandising, really, did you? You were in, not quite credit card, but in merchant card services, isn't that right?
Yeah, I mean,
that's Jolene now speaking.
This is Jolene, yeah. I mean, it was about 10 years ago now. So we were both in area sales for a payments company at the time. So I wouldn't even say we met online. I mean, we met in the flesh. At, you know, team meetings and things like that. But we were two opposite sides of the country. I'm from County Limerick, but based in Kerry. And Karina's from County Roscommon and was covering Northwest at the time as well, living in Donegal. So yeah, I mean, we met up a number of times and we just, Karina moved on then a number of years later to go back into entrepreneurship and we just kept in touch.
And while she was being an entrepreneur, she thought of you. Why?
Yeah, so I went through the New Frontiers program, which allowed me to develop an idea, which eventually became this idea with Jolene's help. But
that program is fantastic, isn't
it? Yeah, it really is, because actually what that program made me do was talk to retailers. So you think you know what they want, but it made me. They said, you have to. And in that process was the first ideas around this, that what they needed was support with content. So they also make you write a business plan, which I've done before but didn't particularly want to do. And as I wrote that business plan, Jolene Looney's face kept coming to my mind. I got to the commercial part of the business plan. I knew this could be global. I thought, how can we make it global? And she was the only person I could see. So I also knew that she was really well paid where she was. So what I did was I passed her the business plan just as a, you know, here's what I'm thinking of doing. What do you think? And she was interested. And it happened there.
Now, let us go back one step and explain what is the business. Merchandising, we all know, that's when you go into the shop and you have your Mars bars and you have to make them more prominent or whatever. But you're merchandising online. Is this a specific skill? Is this something that people are not doing properly or have not been doing properly until you landed on Earth?
So, a bit like, I suppose when you talk about the present environment, a bit like what Musgrave's, I suppose, does for present is it puts everything under one roof. So what we do for online is we provide digital web-ready merchandising information to online retailers. So it's a single point of access, a gateway to all their suppliers and brands. So, you know, a typical enterprise retailer could have 300 or 400 suppliers and brands, you know, supplying product into their business. But equally, all those products need to be merchandised online. So instead of having to reach out to 300 or 400 sources or 300 or 400 platforms, or, you know, the brands are very savvy and are getting better technology, but it still doesn't remove the issue of having to reach out to them all, collate all this information, and then it has to be transformed. So images need to be resized, renamed, sequenced, as do product information, reformatted, and to meet the requirements of your web platform. So we've pulled all that into one platform. So we're the link between brands and online retailers.
I do ask this question, and I'm kind of wrong to be asking it, but it still comes to my head. Surely somebody else is doing this already. Karina?
Yes, they are people. So this goes back, I've been dabbling in e-commerce for years and years. And so this online merchandising started with a person in an office going out to all the brands, collecting all the information and getting it ready for the web platform. And that was okay until every product had to be put online. So in the beginning, 5 years ago, it was really just okay to get one image up, and it was okay to have a percentage of your catalogue online, but now it's not. And it's also not okay to have it slow going up online. So when you need speed and when you need your full 100% stock list online, what happened in-house doesn't work anymore. And then you can have a gem of a person that, or two people that might be working on it, but if they're gone on holidays or if they're out, or like the people thing just doesn't work. I liken this to, you know, general retail back in the 80s, when people managed the whole movement of goods and everything. And that did get improved with ERP processes and, you know, stock taking that happened automatically. That's what's going to happen with online retail. Everyone thinks, oh, it's e-commerce, so it's really tech savvy and everything must be perfect. And it's not. It's a hot mess under the bonnet, and that's what we're in to fix.
And tell me some of the big mistakes that people made, so make, should I say, and that you fix, and give them, we like little insights, we like tips. What should they not be doing? Doesn't matter what they're doing, say selling blankets or selling horses or selling cars or whatever.
Yeah, I suppose what I call a static website, or as actually one of our brand partners described it, as a website is like a house, painting your house. You do the kitchen, the sitting room, the dining room, and before you know it, you're back down painting the kitchen again. So when people go at websites, they think, Asher, look, we'll get the whole catalogue up online and it'll be grand. But, you know, there's constantly new stock coming in. It constantly has to be refreshed. So that's, you know, certainly in the small, medium business space, definitely something to be considerate of. In the enterprise space,
When you use the term enterprise, you're talking about big companies.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, probably 10 million online turnover and above, which is where we're happiest, and where our service is best utilised. You know, some key areas there to look at is how fresh the content is. So brands do change imagery a lot. Product, actually recently a lot on the back of COVID. So a lot of product images have had to change because products have been filled in different countries and things like that. So
I can just see this nightmare.
Yeah, it is.
It's a nightmare.
Yeah. Yeah,
but it's this nightmare that you guys are fixing, is it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Now I'm beginning to get it. Now, what about other companies? And I'm not sure exactly, does it do anything like you're doing? Pointy, for example, are you familiar with Pointy? Is Pointy a competitor or?
Oh God, no. Different space. Yeah. Well, not totally different space, a different space.
But and so go back again, if it's not Pointy, are there other companies, be they in Cyprus or in China or wherever, doing something similar to you?
Not really. And that's not being evasive, because the worst thing you can do is a company say we've no competitors.
And nobody would believe you, actually.
No. So it's not that there are replacements for us. Most of it is human based. And that's just because this has only blown up in the last 5 years. So that whole content value chain from a product being created to getting online, there have been loads and loads of companies coming into this space to fill the different holes that are there. And we're just coming in. We're one of the first in this particular hole. This is the hole that was left because it's the biggest mess. So almost everyone that's presented to us to say, would they be a competitor? We kind of go, kind of, but they're more likely to be a partner. it's such a new value chain that all of us companies in there are much more likely to work together to give the retailer or the brand, if they're on that side, a more fluid product in the end of the day.
I'm looking at your client list. It is very impressive already. For example, the one, it's actually more correctly called Moose Jaw, but it's a Walmart company. Mm-hmm. Who found or who got you Walmart?
Well, I mean, we actually spoke to them, was that 2 years ago in NDRC?
Yeah, 2019.
We did the NDRC accelerator program. And through that, again, there was more, you know, market discovery and adding to the idea.
Was that a chance meeting? So down at the NDRC, or?
Well, it was just Gary Layden introduced us to the CEO of Moose Jaw and said, look, they're one of the biggest retailers in the world. Just make sure they have the same problem. And they do, like you said, that they don't have a technical solution to solve this. And they didn't.
Happy days.
Yeah, basically Owen, the CEO.
When you found that out, both of you, what did you do? Did you go, yes.
Yeah.
We
put them on the pipeline.
We put them in the pipeline and we said, okay, what are the next steps? And he kind of jokingly said, sure, come back to me with a solution and we'll talk. And I'd say he thought, I'll never hear from those two again.
And were you talking just about the two of you?
It was just the two of us in the company. So 2 years ago, it was just me and Karina, and we had no technology built. So this is before we'd built the tech. We were just really in discovery mode.
You had a dream. The dream.
Yeah.
We knew there was a problem, yeah.
Yeah, and then we came back to them a year later with a tech solution and they bought it and they're still a customer today and they've tripled their order now. Yeah. So we're full service for this fall. So about...
Oh, this fall, I like that. You're talking American.
So we've 20,000 new SKUs, new products going to them before the end of July to hit the online shelves.
Yeah.
New products. Yeah. That's outside of maintenance, image changes, stuff like that.
Did you call them SKUs?
Yeah, supplier code identifier. It's SKU. It's just in the terms.
Okay.
Sorry.
So looking for, because we're always looking for, to try to help those who join Team GBS, as you have now joined, is who are you looking for, the ideal customers? Like what you say, 10 million online turnover minimum.
Well, give or take, you know, we won't fall out over a couple of million.
But so your ideal client is?
Ideal client is an online retailer, multi-brand. So that's the whole thing, you know. So a lot of people say to us, would you not work with, let's say, Lululemon or something, you know, a brand selling direct B2C, business to consumer, you know. Happy to chat with them, but they're not an ideal client. An ideal client is a multi-brand retailer, like here in Ireland, maybe Brown Thomas Arnott's.
We have a nice relationship with Brown Thomas Arnott's because they have, in fact, coming up very soon, they will be announcing their Pitch 21 winners or shortlist.
That's amazing.
So we had them on the show.
So yeah, multi-brand, large online retailers who are serious about online being their, you know, being their play and getting behind it. That's really where we excel.
And where are you going to find them, say, worldwide? Do you use LinkedIn or do you use the old telephone book how do you link in to another Walmart type company? Say Inditex, would that be one for you? That's the Zara's.
In time, so right now we specialise in sports and outdoor apparel, beauty, cosmetics and personal care. So they're our key sectors, but we will be branching out as we enter more into the department store space. So obviously we do duty free. So that has us in an element of luxury retail and that's fine. But our plan is to dominate those sectors and then move on to the next.
Dominate. You have all the buzzwords.
You have to crack a few eggs to make an omelette.
Go back to the 3 million. What are you going to use that for? Have you a tech team or are they in place already?
We split our raise this year, so we had a number of advisors and people in our circle that were interested in investing. So we took on a safe note for 500,000 at the beginning of the year.
A
safe note. It's kind of like a version of a convertible loan note.
Okay.
So
Simple agreement.
And that allowed us. So usually what happens with startups is that they say, okay, we're going to raise 2 million and then they wait 6 months to raise and then they put the team in place. But that has allowed us to start putting a team in place earlier because we were confident that we would raise our funds pretty quickly. So,
and where is that team? Ireland or abroad? Or
they are based in Ireland, Portugal, Spain,
love it.
Ukraine,
South Africa.
South Africa.
And you manage that? I mean, geez, you need another software just trying to manage all of that.
Coming on from Holland.
Yeah, we're getting used to it. Yeah, so it's.
But if Mary in Holland and Jack in Portugal, well, first of all, they're in relative. No, they're near enough in terms of time zones and all. But are they all talking to each other, or are they all on different projects, or?
Different teams. So we have the engineering team, the content team, the biz dev team, which Joe's just been building out recently. And yeah, everyone's, it's not easy because we built from being remote. And today we just met some of our team for the first time in Dogpatch Labs. So we've hot desk there. And that was actually amazing. I was just saying to Joe, the difference between able to have a conversation just for 5 minutes across a desk
doesn't it?
Instead of having to say, oh, we need to have a Slack meeting or a Zoom. It was lovely. It was so lovely. So we need to put strategies in place to get more of that, even with the guys that are outside of Ireland. So that's the plan.
And I also shouldn't say this because it's obvious that it isn't a problem, but being based in Donegal, any issues?
No. Because when we actually, COVID allowed us to be remote first. So just before COVID, we were going to take an office in the RDI hub in Kerry because we were like, well, would you Kerry? Well, would you Donegal? And we were trying to figure out with talent, where would be the best.
It doesn't matter.
It did at the time. There was a lot of good talent in Kerry coming out from a tech perspective. So we kind of thought we'd pitch up there. I'm obviously based outside Killarney, RDI hub, big fan. Hey, Liam. But now totally remote is acceptable.
Yeah. And all over the world.
Yeah.
Because they're doing the same here. So I say, fine, you find the best talent wherever it is.
Mm-hmm. Now we do like, and it's amazing for us if we can hire on the Western Seaboard because we're actually bringing employment then to that area.
Of course. And people want to live there as well.
Yeah. So we'll stack the odds for that. You know, we'll do whatever we can.
Extra points for those who apply from the Western Seaboard. You're only saying that to keep the Western Seaboard.
You can't say that, but yeah. No, but it's true. So yeah, like we did say at the WDC, we're remote, but we can stack the odds to the West because how we present ourselves in the West of Ireland and how we promote the jobs that are available can attract the talent from the East. As you can see, it's happening already, the big exodus. So we're happy to, anyone out there looking for a job?
Are you hiring?
We are.
Always hiring.
We are always hiring. That's our
new
tagline.
Who are you looking for? You better shout out what you are looking for.
At the moment, we're looking for a financial controller within the next few months. And the most important hire for us right now will be a COO. So job description in the making. But if there's any operations people out there that want to come on an amazing journey with us too and the team, that's our next.
And probably Dev, I think we're probably looking for more Dev, are we?
Dev, I think they're okay now. The last two pieces of the puzzle are in.
Dev being not the famous former politician.
Not that Dev.
The world domination, I know it's flippant in some ways to say it, but is, you know, do you dream of world domination?
Yeah, it's not flippant. It's the plan from the beginning, to be clear.
I mean, it's easy to say it. Everybody who plays tennis wants to play at Wimbledon or whatever.
Yeah, no, that's why we're here. So both of us could be very successful doing whatever we want to do. Both of us could set up this business to be an Irish business, a really strong Irish business that does something. We're not in that game. We're here actually to build a global business. So that's our aim. It's not, oh my God, we have a global business. Isn't that amazing? How did that happen? We're actually here to build a global business.
And what drives that? Where did that drive come from?
Work smart, not hard. Like, I mean, if you, you know, so we're building obviously technology. So it's what we would say SWAS, software with a service. So to look from the outside in, you'd go, okay, this is a service business, but actually it's not. The technology that's been built and that will continue to be built out under our new CTO will actually empower us and empower the business to scale and onboard and deliver to customers so much quicker. I mean, you know, it's going to get to the stage where you can send in a request for, you know, 100,000 new products and probably have a number of them delivered same day and continually. So, like, we're at that stage now where there's same day deliveries and things like that.
Oh my God, really?
Yeah, but I mean, but there's always...
For that size or that number or whatever, but it's all automated, I presume. You couldn't... You
know, majority, I mean, it's brand dependent. So that's the thing that people miss maybe with our business is we're not writing copy. So what we're doing is working with the
taking
brands.
Taking it all in.
Yeah. We work at the highest level with brands, licensed information from the brands that they've worked so hard to write and put their own brand truth into. We protect actually all that for the brands. So the brands are our partners. So what we're trying to do for brands is represent their products in the best light with authenticity around the product. So make sure the images are kept perfect. They'll be resized and renamed to meet the retailer's needs and things like that. But that the copy is merely reformatted, spell checked, things like that. But, you know, we're not overwriting anything they do. So that's what's allowed us to deliver huge volumes of information to retailers really quickly, because we're deep diving in those sectors. So if we went on like a spray and pray approach now and tomorrow said, oh, let's go into hardware and let's go into furniture and let's go in, you're not going to deliver a level of excellence to those, to every sector.
Yep.
So, but we do, the technology will be built out. That's what will allow us to be global. I mean, there's no barriers now. The only thing that's holding us back right now is just the rate we're scaling and yep. you know, getting talent.
And when are you going to sell?
Well, good.
You weren't expecting that, were you?
Good companies get bought.
Yeah,
they don't sell.
We don't sell. Good companies get bought, right?
You have all the buzzwords.
When the time is right. Yeah, for sure.
Okay,
when it can add value to another partner. So if a partner in the food chain came to us that we could bring value to their offering, that would definitely be of interest to us. We don't really want to be bought to be sunsetted and shelved off
it'll
somewhere.
It'll be...
You're going to sit in the sunset, I'd say.
Somebody will buy us or we will buy somebody. That's how the sector is. And it just depends on what that looks like.
And your growth plans, are you looking out to 18 months? What will you be looking like in 18 months' time?
That's you, Joe.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I mean, you know, we're very aggressive growth plans for next year. This year, quite aggressive. So we're growing at a rate of 15x per month as it is. But from a base of zero this time last year, that's not as impressive as it sounds.
Yeah. I actually always remind people, simple math.
Yeah.
15 times zero is still zero. Yeah.
we're looking at an annual recurring revenue the end of next year.
You don't have
Can
to tell
I say
me
the
you.
Number?
Yeah. No.
Very impressive.
We don't mind because we understand business.
Sometimes
you have to keep things wrapped. Listen, before I let both of you go, both of you, I hope, are going to tell me who you would hire in a heartbeat. Or did you choose one or did you choose two?
She already hired her favourite.
Good one.
If she wasn't available.
Who would you hire?
It's two different people, actually, but they would work well together, I think. I'm going to go for Tobias Lütke from Shopify, the founder of Shopify.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. I've listened to him on podcasts and how the business came from nothing, basically. So he'd be one of my top, yeah.
And Jolene?
I would go Simon Sinek.
Okay.
Yeah. Just to keep us empowered and on point. And
you're not the first person to choose him. No, that's interesting. Okay. Do either of you read all the stuff that these people write?
Yeah, mainly listen, to be honest, to the audios. But I would read a lot. But yeah, I rather the listening of them, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's nice. You're now on podcast, so you can be listening back to yourselves. Mm-hmm. And this is now down as an official legal record, remember? So everything that you just, all the promises you made.
God, I'm glad I didn't say that.
All the promises that you made to your investors, isn't that right? It's all there. So listen, please come back to us we'll put you into the diary for half a year. No, we'll make it a little longer, 12 months.
12 months time, yeah.
So I want to see what's happening, because I think you're onto something huge. I hope are anyway, yeah.
We are.
And you do believe in this.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah,
we do. We just need to make it happen now. So that's the next 12 months will be amazing.
Good. And based up in Donegal, how nice. And you're down in?
Kerry.
Kerry. My family home place, yeah. Okay, that is Karina Kelly and Jolene Looney, co-founders of Content Llama. Thank you so much for joining us on That Great Business Show. And that is it from That Great Business Show. And this are 39th episode. As always, my thanks to the team here at Dublin South FM Podcast Studios. It was a first for sound engineer Alison O'Dwyer, who had to prep the studio for two llamas. Get it? Oh, God. It's worse, isn't it?
Llamas.
The Picasso of sound, Peter Rice, will do some further brushwork. Get that Picasso brushwork? Oh, God. On us later to guarantee our position as the world's best sounding podcast. I have to write this stuff, you know. This doesn't,
it's beautiful,
this doesn't
it's
just
beautiful.
Happen.
No, it's beautiful.
His book will hit stores soon.
And today's Gurav Mahagat's go to Maeve Hooley at IsMe for sending us Margaret O'Rourke Doherty, Jimmy Healy at cogency.ie lined up Peter Byrne, and grazie, see what I did there? To Malta based Joe Crunya of the Finesse Group for suggesting the Llama
Thanks,
Ladies
Joe.
To us. Mila Buichas to you all. Please, please, please keep them coming. If you know a business that needs to be featured on Ireland's Best Business Podcast, send details now to producer@thatgreatbusinessshow.com. You'll find all you need to know about what we're looking for on our website when you click on the Share Your Story button. We're in business. So if you're in business, why not tell others about it by advertising on the only business podcast that does business differently and does terrible puns. Do also follow us on our LinkedIn page, where we have some bonus material, including our sneak peek every week. Finally, my thanks to our sponsor, DeFactoShave.com, the world's best shaving oil, bar none. Try it for a week, and like me, you will be a forever convert. So from me, Conal O'Moran, until next week, Slán tomo.